So the, this is a joint project that's mostly work with Ben Golub, who's a student at Caltech, and then there's parts of it I'll also talk about some ongoing work with Sergio Corrini and Paolo Pinna, University of Venezia. So what we're looking at in this project is modeling transmission of beliefs, opinions, and behaviors in social networks. And the kinds of questions we're interested in is how these converge, when and how they converge over time, when it is that, that groups will end up with conforming beliefs, and when it is that they might sustain differences in beliefs. And things like how the convergence and speed depends on the social structure, who's influential. And one of the questions I'll focus in on in the second part of today's talk will be when it is that, that situations with lots of individuals who are disparately informed, when it is that, that the social structure will aggregate their information so it becomes accurate. And the structure, I'll just start with some examples. So just to give you an idea of what the structure is, it's basically going to be a situation where individuals are going to be in a stochastic matrix. So each individual is paying attention to other individuals with some weights and spending time with themselves with some percentage of the time. So it's, these weights are going to be things like updating. So how much do I weight my own opinion, and how much do I weight the opinions of other individuals? So just to give you a very simple example.
The direction of the arrow is the direction of the information or the direction of the listening?
This is the direction of the listening. So person one, for instance, let's suppose that they start, so we ask them what the whether a new movie is worth going to. And one person starts and says, with probability one, it's a good movie, the new Spider-Man, and the other person says probability zero. Person one now weights their own opinion 50% and weights the other opinion, person's opinion 50%. And this person weights person one's opinion 40% and person their own opinion 60%. Okay? So we've just got a very simple linear operator that's going to operate over time. So what we're going to do is take this, and now we update. So they start with these beliefs, they talk to each other, and after one period, person one's weighted 0, 50% and 1, 50%, so they're in a new belief of 50%. Person two now has weighted person one 40% and person two 60%, so they're at a belief of 0.4.
Okay.
And now we just iterate. So this process is going to continue over time, and we'll just see where the process goes. So it's a very simple mathematical process here. So you know you can keep looking at this, and this one converges eventually so that the beliefs would be 44%. Okay. So in general, we're looking at a society where there's some number of individuals, and the interaction pattern is given by some weighted directed network, which is going to be the stochastic matrix. And so the matrix is just indicating what percent weight each individual puts on other individuals in the society.
But these weights are only restricted to 0, 1?
Exactly. So it's
like if you don't believe anything I say, and I say something is true, then you won't reject me. Just say a zero.
I can put zero on your. I can put zero on.
No, I was thinking like you should maybe also allow a minus one.
Right. Contrary.
Sure. So the input vector can be anything you want.
No. But contrary, when you say A, I say B.
Oh, I see. So you want to allow for negative weights and things like that. Sure. What we're going to do here is we're going to work with the stochastic matrix, but a lot of some of the things here, some of the results will be dependent on the stochastic nature of the matrix, and others won't. And I think that'll become pretty obvious.
And if it's stochastic, how do you not conserve probability in the previous example?
I'm not sure what you mean. How did it?
When you started with 1, 0, you end up with 0.44. Those don't add to 1 anymore.
No, so when I say stochastic matrix, I mean that the each row. So the weight that individual I puts on other individuals, stochastic matrix, that's just a term that means that those rows sum to one.
Yeah.
Okay. So each individual has their 100% of their time to spend, and they spend it with, you know, how much of it they spend talking to other people and being influenced by them is what has to sum to one. Okay. So this is basically just how much of my social interaction do I spend with other individuals, with given individuals, and how much do I spend weighting myself.
So in what way is it different from the Markov chain?
It's not. So a lot of the mathematics here is going to be basically a Markov. It's going to be a Markov.
Then you should conserve probability, and I don't see why you lose some.
So what's happening here is this is an external vector, right? So what we're doing is we're bringing in a vector, and we're just taking this matrix and multiplying.
But the sum of the entries of,
I guess it's not W.
It's not doubly stochastic.
So basically, what we're going to do is we're going to start with some sort of beliefs, attitudes, etc. These. And we'll start with these things generally to be in 0, 1 of those. It doesn't have to be. You can take them to be vectors, whatever. And basically what we'll do is just update in this manner. So start at a given time, operate with t, you get a new belief. I'll use that terminology, a new belief for each individual at each point in time. And we're just going to update that and study the properties of this. Okay? And we're going to use a lot of results from our function. So here's just an example. If we had this interaction structure, T would be look like this. We start with these beliefs of P0. We operate, we get the first period beliefs, and then just keep looking at the process of this. Okay. So let me just mention some applications from the social literature. So obviously what I was talking about has appeared in different places in that there's a model by Friedkin and Johnson in the 1990s that modeled social influence, where they were basically looking at a process by which you paid attention to people with given weights. There's a paper in economics by DiMarzo, Vianos, and Zwiebel, where you're looking at beliefs and updating. If you go back to centrality measures in the social network literature, there's a lot of centrality measures like that originally due to Katz and developed by Bonasich and so forth that have been based on eigenvalue. Vector-based centrality measures. When you look at things like Google PageRank things, they're effectively looking at these kinds of you look at how much influence you get from other pages with how much influence is exactly looking at this kind of, there the T would just be the connections, the page connections that you have. You can do recursive utility calculations if you're doing situations where there's altruism and people care about the utility of other individuals. So there's a number of different applications where the same kind of structure is used. So what we're doing is looking at this system, and what we're trying to do is to, first of all, understand how the convergence depends on the social structure, what does it converge to when it converges, how much influence do different people have, when do beliefs differ across subgroups, and when do beliefs become accurate. So one question that would be interested in the end is suppose that each person gets an independent IID draw of some random variable that the society might be interested in. So everybody gets their own information, and then we aggregate according to this system. When is it that the society is going to converge to have the right, when is the law of large numbers going to hold in these settings? When is it going to be that people are going to actually end up with the right beliefs? Okay, so just to give you an idea of convergence, if you look at various matrices. This is one where it converges nicely. So as you look up, you start with these beliefs. You can just go through and iterate. The beliefs here converge to 2/5, and that turns out to be the influence that individual has. So if you want to find the influence that any individual has in these things, it's very simple. You just put in a unit vector with weight 1 on them, and then look at what the convergence to the society is. If it converges, it converges to that person's weight. So in this society, this person has weight 2/5. In this society also, this person ends up with 2/5 weight, and this person ends up with 1/5 weight. So you can go through, and this one converges nicely.
So while it's not true that if you start with one, you will end with something which adds up to one, you say if you start with the vector 1, 1, 1, you end up with the vector 1, 1, 1?
If you start with if you start with something which has identical entries in all three things, then everybody is putting a weight of one, so they're adding up, they're taking a weighted average of the same objects, you're going to have something which is just going to be stationary. Everybody's going to have the same beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you start with the same beliefs, you go to the same beliefs. But otherwise, you might converge to something which is different, and what you converge to depends on what the influence of these different individuals is. Okay, so here's an example with no convergence. So this is a situation where both person 2 and 3 are paying attention to person 1, and person 1 is waiting 2 and 3 at 50-50.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you start with 1-0-0. Then what happens is both people 2 and 3 now say, okay, well, we just saw person 1 had belief 1, so they go to belief 1. Person 1's waiting the 0-0s, goes to 0, and now it's just going to blink back and forth, right? So the next stage, now person 1's looking at 2 1s, and the other people are looking at 0s, and so we're going to end up going back and forth.
So this is just the formulation of the vorticity of matter.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to end up with is just... you know, so convergence here is just going to be linked to aperiodicity of this. So it's just a convergence of Markov chains. So if you want convergence, so let's say that this system is going to converge if this process has a limit which exists for every starting vector. Okay, so start with any vectors of beliefs. We want this system to have a nice defined limit. Convergence here is defined to be exactly that. So T is aperiodic. If you look at, so we by any T, we end up with a directed graph where we're just putting in directed arcs if there's some weight between individuals. It's aperiodic if the greatest common divisor of all the simple cycles is 1. Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes.
It seems like all of this is predicated on that there's simultaneous update of everybody. If I had serial update,
right, so actually if you do serial updating, then you're going to get convergence basically always in these things, yeah.
And if you add some noise, will you get
so
convergence?
So if you add a little bit of noise, then that's going to help get convergence. So the convergence questions are going to be fairly easy.
Yeah.
So basically just, you know...
So the lack of convergence is
not...
Right, it's not stable.
Right.
If
you
perturb
things
it away
a little bit,
from there, then it will.
Exactly. That's precisely right.
So, would the amount of time it takes to converge, does that have any social or economic interpretation?
Yeah, it has a lot of. I'm going to get to that. So that's where. So I'm just. This is just preliminaries to try and just. I'll just try and move through this stuff quickly, and then we'll get to the meat of the talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Your example where you said this one doesn't converge had also a different problem. It was not. It was a reducible case, right? This one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different issue from periodicity here.
So first of all, this is strongly connected, right? So I can get from any individual to any individual. So it's irreducible, but it's periodic.
It's irreducible.
Yes, it's. This one's periodic, but it's so there's a difference between right.
All right,
it's periodicity, not reducibility, that's the problem that is around.
Okay.
So when we're looking here, so let's just say when we look at individuals, we can say that there's a closed group if they're not influenced from the outside. So if they're putting weight 1 on their group, and people might be paying attention from them. From the outside, but not vice versa. So these ones are the ones that are going to influence where things converge to. So the quick theorem that is just the standard aperiodicity is that T is convergent if and only if it's aperiodic when restricted to any closed set of nums. Okay? And the if part is standard. The only if part you just construct. You can just construct, give me one with periodicity, you can show that. So what do things converge to? So again, this is going to be something that's fairly straightforward. The agents in any closed group, if we've got convergence, are going to converge to the same beliefs. Okay, so they're weighting each other, they're taking averages over each other's beliefs, If it's converging to something, then it's going to have to be that, that you end up with exactly the same beliefs of all the individuals. So the question is, what does that converge to? So what you'd like to look for is this, a vector S, which indicates what the limit's going to be. And this is just the relative influence that each agent has. Okay? So in particular, what we'd like to do is just have this vector, look at the initial vector of beliefs, and have a vector such that if we just take this transpose times P, we get exactly what we're going to converge to. So this is like the 2/5 on the one person's weight. That tells how much weight that person's beliefs enter into the final product. Okay? So we'd like to look for this object. Well, when you begin to think about if we're operating that on P, we're getting the final belief. We should also get the same final belief if we ran the process for a while and then operated this thing. Okay. So we start the process and then we say, well, people's influence eventually, if we ran it for a while and then asked where the beliefs were and then ran this vector, we should get the same answer. So that tells us that S has to be the same thing as S times T. So basically this thing's just going to be the left-hand unit eigenvector. Okay. So we can figure out what the influence looks like in terms of eventually what T is going to be by just looking at the left-hand unit eigenvector of this matrix. And indeed, if you, whenever these things converge, all the rows converge to the left-hand eigenvectors. Okay. So when you look at T, the T to the infinity, it's converging to exactly just rows of eigenvectors. So I think that gets to this question of what the speed of convergence is and what how many times do you talk to the same people about the same kinds of things. So we're going to be very interested in speed of convergence because it might be that I just have one conversation with you about a movie. Or I might have many conversations. I might be some people I talk to many times. And so the rates of convergence, it might be that we never get to the T infinity. And so what we're really interested in is T after a few periods. Okay. And I'll give you some examples in a minute and talk about how to interpret this in the context of those examples. Okay. So when you begin to think about this, then the influence that individual I has, since this is just the eigenvector, is the same thing as summing TJIs times Sj, so that the influence that I has is basically can be determined by looking at how much weight J gives I, how much weight J has given by how much weight J gives to I. So you get influence by being paid attention to with people with influence. So this turns out to be a very useful equation in doing a lot of the calculations that we have later. Okay, so it's a very simple equation, but the kinds of things you can begin to do is then do comparative statics in the social matrix. So if some person ends up with more friends, paying more attention, then how does their influence change? Okay. So some quick comparative statics. Suppose you start with a matrix T, and then you add some perturbation to it. Okay, so just add a small delta times C, where C has rows summing to zero. So we're preserving this matrix, and we're just adding, we're just shifting weights around. Okay, so C is just some shifts in weights that individuals are giving to other individuals. And then what we're interested in is sort of what's the derivative of this influence for small changes in the weights. So as we're shifting weights around a little bit, how does the influence change as a function of how we're shifting weights? And you can actually figure out what the derivative at zero looks like. There's some very nice mathematics here which just allows you to directly do these calculations.
What is E?
So E is just a unit vector. Okay, so E is a vector of ones.
All ones.
All ones, yes. So this, the derivative of this thing at zero just turns out to have a nice form. And this you can find in a paper by Schweitzer in 1968, looking at derivatives of Markov chains. So this is fairly easy. And then what we do is we convert that into something. We show that in this case with these stochastic matrices, you actually get a nice form for this, which allows you to do some direct calculations on how things are changing. So what we can do is then you can derive a bunch of corollaries from this about, suppose I take an individual and I take the weights that they're paying attention to a bunch of people, and I shift some weights away from some individual, so I'm paying attention to person 3, 4, and 5, and now I shift my attention towards person 1. What happens? You can show that person 1's weight goes up, and then if I shift one weight away from one person, that person has to go down. And if I do it repeatedly, I'm shifting weight away from some people, those people's influence goes down, and the other person's weight goes up.
Okay.
So basically,
I don't understand this equality. I mean, if the ES transpose would not be there, I would understand the equality. But what happens to that term? Or does that totally disappear?
Okay, so what happens is what you have to do is there's a number of lines of derivation here. But this ES transpose is going to be a matrix with all of the same,
just cancels out.
It's going to cancel out because basically what you're going to do is bring that back, and then when you start multiplying by t's, you can, it's more than a page of manipulation, so it's not a direct calculation, but it works. Okay, so then we can ask this question of how fast convergence is, because we're interested in sort of understanding whether it's going to take us, whether we need lots and lots of iterations on this to get there or not. This case, it converged reasonably quickly. Here's an example where you obviously are going to get very slow convergence. You start with 1 and 0, and people are paying attention mostly to themselves, 99% to themselves. Things just sort of creep along. Eventually, it's going to get to a half, but it's going to get there very, very slowly. And so now let me mention sort of why you're going to be interested in the speed of these things. So one thing we've actually been using these kinds of Markov transition matrices for is studies of social mobility. And what you can do is there's a lot of data on, so this is a separate project of Tony Calvo, but what you do is you look at individuals' choices of whether or not to pursue higher education. And there's lots and lots of data on this across a number of countries. And it turns out that these are very highly influenced by their cohort. And in fact, you can write down, you can estimate what the influence of each individual is. So you have individuals are paying attention to what their neighbors look like, and you map out a social network. You look at the choices of the neighbors, and that gives you a good indicator of what the probability that a given individual is going to take that choice is. Now, that updating is basically, you look at an individual, they're making this choice once and for all. So the updating is moving as if a generation is a period. Okay. So when you start talking about social mobility, then you're going, a single transition in this matrix for a community is what its descendants' choices are and how that depends on the connectedness of that network. And then you iterate again on the next generation, and this thing is moving over generations. So you think of an individual being replaced by their child making a decision, replaced again by another child, the child makes a decision, and so forth. And in that kind of situation, these things are very, very slow. And that's very different from something where you're talking about kids, talking about movies, where the communication is moving back and forth very rapidly. So understanding the speeds of convergence can be important. Okay, so obviously in segregated societies, you're going to end up with very low weights from some groups to other groups. And you can end up then maintaining differences in beliefs for long periods of time, because it can take a very long time. You start with ones down here and ask how long it is before you end up with that influencing things up top. It can take a long time. So in particular, let's look at 1 minute measure of integration, where what we do is we look, let's minimize over sets. So look at a set A. Minimize over sets that are less than half the population the relative weight that group is putting on groups outside of A. And then divide that by the size of A. Okay, so you're looking at sort of per capita, how much is a group looking outward compared to how much it's looking inward. So that's one measure of integration. So here, for instance, this group is not very well integrated with the whole society, because they have just one weight going out of 0.2, and there are 5 individuals. So in this case, this measure would be 0.04. Okay. So that's a particular measure you can look at. And what you can show is If we look at a connected, so let's look at a society where it's fully connected, you can get from any individual to any other individual. And it's reciprocal, so if I pay attention to somebody else, they must be paying attention to me.
Could be 7 degrees.
Oh no, so they can be different weights, but it's that I'm looking, if I'm looking at somebody, they have to be, it goes both ways. And each individual has at least two people that they pay attention to. Okay? So if you have those, then what you can do is you can show that if the integration measure is high, basically close to one, then the convergence of beliefs for all individuals in the starting distribution is exponentially fast. So it's something which is moving with the second eigenvalue, and you can show that the second eigenvalue is very high in cases where the integration measure is high. So integration, actually what we do in this theorem is just show that the integration measure maps into the second eigenvalue. Okay. And so here you get to this, you get fast convergence, and if the integration measure is low, close to zero, then you can get convergence of beliefs for some individuals, and some starting distributions can be made to be slow. Yes.
So it does look very similar to what's called Chivirin quality or conductance bound, where you have similar measures where you're not normalized by the size, but you essentially get the same.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, you know, basically, so let me go back. So what these theorems piggyback off of is when you look at Markov chain results, there's a whole series of results which say, if I look at the starting distribution and then trying to figure out how quickly I get to the steady state distribution, that's related to the size of the second largest eigenvalue raised to some power. And now what you need to do is try and figure out what the second largest eigenvalue looks like. And so there's a series of different analyses which try and get handles on what second and largest eigenvalues look like. And generally what we do in this theorem is prove that this, depending on what that measure is, the second largest eigenvalue has to be bounded away from the first or very close to the first. And the first one in these matrices has to be one. So then you can bound this convergence very rapidly. But you're right. I mean, there's a series of people who've looked at expander graphs and other kinds of things as well and tried to figure out what these things look like.
So what if minus one is the first thing you wrote down?
Right, so you can get situations where you're going to end up with negative eigenvalues, but effectively what's important here is the absolute value of these things.
Yeah, but in that simple one, it didn't start out with plus one
and minus one, right. And so in that case, the convergence was fast.
Yeah.
That's good. So basically that says that the second largest one is going to be one, and you're going to get convergence very quickly. So the problem is when the second largest one is close to zero.
From your previous slide, I got the impression that you implied that the slow convergence is not exponential. Is that right?
So what I should say is the slow convergence is in quotes. And what it means is effectively there exists some initial values such that pi minus, when you look at what it's converging to, that's going to be larger than this. But again, this is still exponential. So it's still moving exponentially, but when you make this thing close to zero, the bounds are not, it's not great when you say it. So. Fast convergence is tight, and the slow convergence is.
So your analysis doesn't say anything about C. Just say
No. And exactly, and C depends on you have to do the full spectral decomposition to get the C sound.
So do you know if C depends on A, the number of nodes, or just the maximum degree, or things like that?
You can develop a bound on C, which is, I think C is going to depend on N. No, I agree. So these bounds. So in practice, these are limit theorems, asymptotic results, and they're giving rates of convergence, and exactly how quickly, what's quick and what's slow depends on the application.
So for example, if I'm directly correct, you could have seen that it depends on the maximum degree, which
yes.
Is really annoying.
It is.
Annoying.
What's what's the typical value of K?
So
basically what you're getting is you're getting a race here, so the exponential is dominating this polynomial, but you know, I don't know, so exactly, these are gonna be things that are matrix specific. You give me a matrix, I can get a different C and a different K out, and I can drive them up and down in different ways. So these are asymptotic results, they're not. Okay, let me just give you one picture. This is to give you an idea of what some of these integration measures look like. This is from the Ad Health data set. So what this is it was a series of interviews that were conducted in the 1990s of about 90,000 US high school students, and they named friends. And so here they were given a list of all the other kids in the high school, and they could point to each person that they had certain interactions with in a given week. This is done by race. So they were asked the race and the categorizations they could choose were white, black, Hispanic, Asian, or other. And then there's a few missing data points. This is one of the, there's actually 100 and almost 200 high schools in this data set. You know, this is one that's fairly evenly mixed. It's about 52% white, 38% black, 5% Hispanic, and 5% other. There's no Asian students in this high school. But the thing that you know is fairly striking, fairly obvious, is that the white students are basically interacting almost entirely with the white students and the black students with the black students. The Hispanics are fairly well integrated here. But what this shows you is that when you begin to look at these things, here the integration measure is less than 3%. So if you start out with beliefs of one type on one part of the network and zeros on the other, here this will take a number of iterations before you get anywhere close to having convergence. So again, this is just to give you an idea that when you look at these things, they have strong patterns, and something that this is the part of the work with Sergio Carini and Paulo Pin. We've been basically analyzing along with this data set goes a whole series of behaviors. And you can begin to look at what the T's look like. So you can map out these T matrices explicitly, and then you can also match up, for instance, with how many of the kids smoke, what's their social influence, who are their friends, how many of their friends are smoking, and then you can look at exactly what this vectors look like as well. So that's sort of ongoing work. Okay, so now to the part about whether or not crowds end up making wise predictions. So let's suppose that there's something you're trying to estimate. So you're trying to estimate a random variable. Maybe it is, you know, what the quality of Spider-Man or whether it's going to rain tomorrow. And each individual gets some initial signal, which is this random variable plus noise. Okay. And let's suppose that each person's noise has zero mean and finite variance, and we'll bound the variance above and below. So it might be that some people have more accurate information than others, but everybody gets some noise, and nobody gets infinite noise. So people are getting these signals. And then what we're gonna do is say, let's suppose we start with this, and now we run this procedure. And when is it that a large society is gonna converge to something which is actually the accurate estimate? Right? So if we just had a large society where everybody was taking a full weighted average, then we just have a law of large numbers. Right? We'd be averaging a number of random variables, which are IID draws, so we'd end up with something which had an accurate estimate. But when we're doing this through the society, it could be that some individuals are being paid attention to much more than others, and so their initial beliefs get weighed much more heavily than others. So for instance, what we're going to do is just let the society grow. So we'll look at T sequences of TNs where N is going to infinity. And then we know that if people pooled their information, they'd have an accurate estimate. So we want to ask for which interaction structures does the updating lead to an accurate estimate. So when is it that people acting very naively in this manner are going to actually end up being full Bayesians? Okay, so what we do know is that the beliefs in a convergent society with N agents are going to look like this sum of the initial influences times their initial beliefs. So if we want to know when this eventual belief is converging to the mean, then you know, effectively what we're doing is just in terms of a weak law of large numbers, it has to be that if we want the PLIN to converge, that's going to happen if and only if the highest weight of anybody in society is going to zero. So that's just Chebyshev directly. So you know, weak law of large numbers is fairly direct here. If you want to make sure that when we're looking at these averages, it has to be that nobody's getting too much weight in the society. If somebody is getting too much weight, then basically their signal is going to be ending up being a non-trivial part of the limiting signal. And conversely, if everybody's signal weight is going to zero, then you're going to get enough of a mix of the signals that things will converge. Okay, so you know, then we can begin to ask questions about things like having skewed, you know, fat tails and so forth in the degree distribution. If you end up having, this is just a simple example, suppose that we had an individual that everybody was putting 1 minus epsilon weight on themselves, but epsilon weight on some individual. And this individual was putting 1 minus delta on themselves and delta over n minus 1 on the other individual. So here you've got somebody who's a hub. This actually speeds convergence very rapidly because everybody's paying attention to the same person. But when you look at what the eventual weight is, this individual maintains weight which does not disappear in the limit. So their weight is actually epsilon over epsilon plus delta, regardless of the size of the society. Whereas everybody else's weight is something which is going to zero as the society grows. So the other individuals have equal weights, but those are so this is an obvious example where you're not going to get convergence. So then we started thinking, well, obviously what we need to do is rule out situations where a single individual is getting too much weight in the society. So how are you going to do that? Well, you can put in conditions which sort of even that out. But let me show you another example, which is a lot harder to get rid of. So here's a situation where we just put people in a line. And each person pays attention 1 minus delta to the person to their left and delta to the person to their right. And then we have to just close things, so in the end, we have that this person put delta weight on themselves, and this person put 1 minus delta weight on themselves. Okay, so you just line people up. And now this is a situation where you would guess, since it's a long line, that you know, and everybody's doing more or less a symmetric thing, that you wouldn't get, nobody would retain large weight in this society. But as you grow this society, this person's weight is gonna converge to something that's just 1 minus 2 delta over 1 minus delta. So this person's weight converges to something which is high, and it doesn't go away. So just to put in some weights, suppose that everybody paid 2/3 attention to the person to the left and 1/3 to the right. This person's weight in the end of the society converges to 1/2. This person to 1/4, this person to 1/8, just a geometric series. So in fact, what's happening is, you know, when you look at what the eventual society's belief is, it's 1/2 this person's signal plus 1/4 this person's signal plus 1/8. So you're not going to get a lot of large numbers here. So the kinds of conditions, so we have sufficient conditions, we don't have necessary conditions. We have some necessary conditions, but we don't have necessary and sufficient conditions. So the sufficient condition, one condition is basically just saying that no group of less than 1/2 the society can be getting infinitely more weight in than it puts out. Okay? So that's a fairly obvious condition. And this rules out sort of, it's a version of ruling out these hubs, but ruling out groups that can be hubs. Okay? So if you're looking at a group that is less than 1/2 the society and it's getting infinitely more weight in than out, then that group ends up maintaining a lot of weight. So that's one condition. Another condition that sort of rules out this line is that any large enough group must give some minimal weight to a weight to other groups of more than 1/2 the society. So if you look at any group that's at least some size x, so there exists an epsilon and an x, so if any group that's at least size x, and you look at any group that's more than 1/2 the society, then A has to be paying some epsilon weight to that other group. So it's saying that you have to have some connections to outside parts of the society. And when you put those two things together, then you've got sufficient conditions for wise crowds. So basically this balance condition and minimal dispersion are sufficient conditions to make sure that nobody retains infinite weight in the limit. So So a large society now, if you had these kinds of conditions, would have to be one that, that everybody's weight is converging to zero. And the, you know, the proof of that is brute force. We basically use these equations on the comparative statics to bound the weights that anybody has. Okay, so basically, you know, small groups can't get more weight in than they send out, and large groups must give some minimal weights to very large groups. You can come up with other versions of these conditions. You know, you can weaken the balance condition at the expense of strengthening the dispersion condition. So there's variations on this. So I guess one conclusion of this is that ending up with situations where the society is actually converging are reasonably special. You can't have any locally influential individuals. One thing I didn't mention, if you had a fully reciprocal society, so that each person, if I weight somebody by a certain amount, they weight me by the same amount, in situations where this graph is symmetric, then everybody's weight turns out to be 1 over n. So in situations where you've got full symmetry of these matrices, you end up with very, very dispersed values. So then you just converge to 1 over n. But that's a very strong condition. So you know, full reciprocity, generally, the people you might be listening to don't have to be listening to you. And otherwise, you need certain kinds of symmetry and dispersion. So summary, you know, just some direct results off Markov chains that you're getting convergence, if and only aperiodicity. The limiting influence comes from eigenvectors in these worlds. The convergence depends on the basically the second largest eigenvalue, and that's going to you can tie that to whether or not you're getting weights, equal weights between different groups. And then in terms of actually figuring out whether this society is going to come to accurate beliefs over time depends on whether or not individuals maintain too much influence. So there's some sort of balance between groups, and you need some sort of dispersion in order to make sure that the weights of individuals are converging in the nice way. So you know, basically what we're doing here is just trying to point out that you know, these kinds of operators have been used in a lot of different applications, including these centrality measures and other kinds of things. But they give you some, you know, the mathematics from Markov chain theory can be very useful here in beginning to understand how some of this works.